We're live, Lisa Dearson.
Hello, Kat. How are you?
Hi, my dear. I am doing really well. And I want to say hello to anyone who might be watching this live. You're probably going, wait a second, Kat was just here with another guest, which is true. I went and now we're back again for a second conversation. A beautiful conversation. I have Lisa Dearson here with me. And Lisa, I know you're the director of the Equus Film Festival. You have so many titles. Will you please introduce yourself for our guests on the Adventure Paradox podcast?
Well, I'm the executive director and founder of the Equus Film and Arts Fest, but also I'm the director of what we now call the Mustang Summit, which is an educational program for the general public about off-range topics surrounding American Mustang horses. So that's a whole new thing for us, and it's so exciting. And there's even since we talked in Denver, there's so much more that's happened. It's explosive. It's so much fun.
Oh my gosh. What is top of mind if someone's just scrolling through right now that you want to make sure someone hears and knows about the Mustang Summit?
Oh, well, the Mustang Summit's strictly educational. We want people to know about all of the horses that are in holding. We try to keep our topics. We'll have a little bit about some of the on-range issues in if someone is there to talk about it. But for the majority of it, we focus our energy and our efforts on trying to home the almost 80,000 horses in BLM holding pens. And the ones that can't get homed, we partner with one of the people that was a fabulous guest at our festival in Denver was Patrick Craig with the Wild Horse Sanctuary. And he takes kind of third strike horses or older horses that older Mustangs that just aren't going to get homed, and he gives them sanctuary. So they right now have 22,000 plus acres. They have a program where people can spend $700 and buy an acre to add to that ranch, and they're buying parcels as they keep going. So I have a lot of problems with a lot of the so-called sanctuaries or wild horse advocates that want to keep them out on the range because, in case the viewer listeners don't know, they're having a cull right now in Australia. I don't ever want to see that happen here in this country. And we came very close 2 years ago on one of the Native American reservations where they were down to the day before when they finally called that off, issuing hunting license. So we're very close to having something like that happen here. So if we can manage and we can get people to understand about the wild horses and why management is so important and why these horses need homes, then we're doing our job. You can be one person working one Mustang horse, and we need every one of those people that are out there doing it, or we can have that, like the Mustang Summit platform, or even with the films we show at the Equus Film Festival, and touch thousands of people and people around the world that just don't even have no clue about Mustang horses until they see one of our documentaries or hear one of our guest panelists speaking on the, about talking about veterans programs or youth programs or prison programs. We're very lucky. Randy Helm is one of our Mustangers. We call them Mustangers, the people who come in gentle. We get six yearlings and they come and they gentle these Mustangs and they talk about their different gentling techniques. There's no rushing. There's no hurry up and let's get a saddle on them because we use yearlings. So when you use a yearling, you take away the ability for trainers to go out there and yeehaw it. So it's all about educating and soft and kindness and gentleness and connection. The connection with the horse is the most important.
I had the great privilege of interviewing Kevin Lloyd, wild horse specialist. And also Matt Monroe, your
Oh,
Mustang
yep.
Champions Executive Director at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo. Such a gift. Thank you again for helping put that together. And it was eye-opening for me and also heart-opening to better understand some of the reasons why a cull might even be on the radar in our country in this 2024 you know, time in history that we're living in, and better understand the issues on the range, the issues of fertility. If a mare can be impregnated 12 to 15 days after she drops a foal, and there's no control, what happens when they just keep growing and growing and growing? So that was really eye-opening for me. And also hearing about some of the educational programs. I don't think Matt told you this, but Matt was across from my booth for the book, right? And he had the, what do you call it? Those goggles?
The Oculus glasses for the 3D.
Amazing. The 3D glasses where you could actually go into the range and have horses coming up and drinking water right next to you and spooking, looking at you. And I asked him about the filming, and he said that they were using drones, right? So they could, but still, a horse has never seen a drone. This was kind of weird. You know, it was just like seeing a human for the first time, potentially. And it was a really beautiful experience to get so close. But I loved what he was talking about with working with the youth and the next generation, which is really where my passion is working with women and children to keep them closer to nature and to animals specifically. But when I first met him, I thought he told me that they had rehomed 2 million.
Oh,
2 million horses.
Love that. Yeah.
And so we said, let's manifest that. Let's put that out there, right? But I want to know, Lisa, why do you do it? How did you get called into working with the Mustang?
Oh, well, with having the film festival, and that goes back to how the film festival started, because everything in this is focused around mental health and horses as healers. And I, my firm belief that horses' next job as part of the of our human equine dance is to lead us to help being healthier humans, mentally and physically. We don't need them to carry us to battle. We don't need them to deliver food or goods. But our heart needs them and our minds need them. And so every year, that this is going into our 12th year now with the film festival, we've had documentaries centered on horses and mental health, whether it's veterans programs, youth programs, films. We pulled out something I do at a couple of our local barns and our libraries. When I'm back home during the year, I'll do like we call a little movie night. And we pulled out a movie last week for up at the barn where we had, it was from the UK and it was a youth program in the UK. And we have people in tears watching just what happened, because it was a group of six cocky kids and they put them in with the horses, and game changer. And I've been involved in equine assisted therapy for years. Like I took in the early 2000s, I took my first EGALA certification with Lynn Thomas. Now Lynn Thomas and Horses for Mental Health is a big partner of Equus Film and Arts Festival and the Mustang Summit. She didn't make it to Denver because of the snow we got right beforehand. She was driving in from Utah. But to be able to have a platform to share these kind of stories with everyone. And so out of a lot of those films, and the ones about mental health or the ones about healing, the whole entire festival started because of Rupert Isaacson's documentary, The Horse Boy. That was, Rupert is a friend of mine, and I had wanted, after seeing that film, and I don't know if you've seen it, it's so intensely moving. It's about his son's journey with autism and horses bringing him back. And this was 13, 14 years ago, I saw the film. He wrote a New York Times bestseller as well. I thought everyone I knew should see this, because I don't think people empathize enough with families that have special needs children. And so this was one way for people to see this documentary and understand that. But along with that, I've had films every year about Mustang horses. Good Mustang horse documentaries showing the not so good side of you know, the BLM and the good side of the BLM. But I curate the festival, but I don't restrict what our people can see. I let our audience make their decisions. But we've always had the Mustang thundering in the back of this festival. And so I became executive director of the Mustang Discovery Ride, which was Lisanne Fear, who rode from Delaware to California 2.5 years ago. Now everything's popping up in the, you know, Facebook memories on where we were 2 years ago. Julianne Neal is the filmmaker, so that documentary is in production right now. But Lisanne rode four Mustangs and a Mulestang across the country. She went through 12 states, right across the heart of the United States. We had different filmmakers going in and joining her and riding and filming. And now Julianne's curating all of this content together into what we call Mustang Stories. And I'll give you a link for that for people to watch the Mustang Stories. And then for the documentary that'll be out about the ride. So it's been a lot of fun to be able to just share that. And the Mustangs are so, when they connect to someone, I have a Lusitano, so I have an Iberian horse. The strongest blood in Mustangs is Iberian. And when you go all the way back through the DNA, actually every horse on the face of the earth comes back to the American Mustang. Every horse, whether it's in Africa or Russia or Brazil, all started on the North American plateau east of the Mississippi River. That's where they pulled all of the bones and collected the DNA. So when the Spaniards brought these beautiful Iberian horses back to Mexico and they got loose and went up and they are what our American Mustangs are now, they're all Iberian. And so there'll be crosses and some thoroughbred blood or some draft horse blood or, you know, different horses that have been kind of interbred with the original Spanish blood. But it's so cool because you see that Iberian influence and it's very strong with these horses.
Well, I have two questions for you. First of all, I definitely want to hear about your horse. I always want to hear about a girl's horse. But second of all, did you say you were riding along with the film?
I went and drove and did a tiny bit of riding, but most of the time we have stuff blooming here. My nose is crazy. We would have different filmmakers go and ride. So we have a gal right now. Her name is Rhonda Gregorio. She's in the process of finishing up a book that she's been doing for the last 4 or 5 years called The Mustang Book Project, Wild Heart. And she's filmed and photographed all of the top Mustang people around the country. And I just saw some tear sheets from it today. It's ready to go to print. It's stunningly beautiful. It's a big coffee table book. And she has a picture in this book of Lisanne when we were in Washington, D.C., and she's in front of, we went down and they rode through downtown DC to the Washington Monument. Mm-hmm. And the photos are in front of the Washington Monument and it's breathtaking. It's like, wow. So Rhonda's pulling that book together, I had some incredible people going along with her and Julianne rode and filmed. So it's quite a story.
It sounds like an adventure. We love adventures. So
Lisanne was at the event. She was a booth or an aisle over from you in Denver.
I think we might have met, but I'm not 100% sure. There were a lot of people at that event. Tell me about your horse. Is this your first horse, your only horse?
Let's hear about your horse. I have now gelded. He's 23, but he was a Lusitano stallion up until a year and a half ago. Big gray. He's in the picture I sent you for my bio. He's my hard horse. But I kind of say that I have horses until they pass. So even if I have a horse in my life and it becomes shared with someone else, they're still part or I'm connected. And so I bred Lusitano horses for, oh my gosh, about 12 years we were breeding. And I know, I'm going to say probably 80% of my babies, I know where all my babies are. And I interact with people who have my babies, or I get to see my babies. My babies are having babies now. And this past weekend, one of my friends and person who purchased one of our horses took the horse into her first horse show, this dressage show. So it's so fun to have them. It's like having kids, you know, you watch them grow up.
Hey, Kat, here for a quick commercial break. If you haven't heard, my book, The Adventure Paradox, is available on Amazon, and it's been getting some really amazing reviews. It's actually been a little bit overwhelming, and maybe too much to say in the middle of this interview, so we'll get back to it, but I did want to let you know it is available. It was a bestseller in 6 categories. And if you really enjoy this podcast, I think you will really enjoy this book. So please go check it out. Wow. I have a lot of questions about breeding horses, by the way. I'm sure you've been at the birth of a foal, and I'm so curious about hearing maybe a story about that. I've seen videos of the slippers, you know, but how about for somebody who's never been at the birth of a baby horse? What's it like when a foal comes out? Will you take us through a story?
My gosh. Yeah. I foaled out 26 Lusitanos. And it is, each one of them is magical. You're very lucky if you're there. One thing about the Lusitano horses is the mare, a proven brood mare, is very efficient, and you're lucky if you can catch her. She'll fake you out. You'll spend nights in the barn. And the night, but last night you go, I've got him just going in the house for a little while. And you'll come back out and be like, bingo. You'll be very lucky if you catch the fairy feathers on the feet. But when you do get to see them, it's just one of the more of the miracles. I do enhanced foal training. I learned from a gentleman named Alan Pogue. He and Susan De Laurentiis have a program called Imagine a Horse. And they're down in, it's called Pie Town, New Mexico. But he's an older gentleman now, but they still are very involved in horse training. And I hate using the word trick, but they do a lot of really fun stuff with their horses. And so he taught me, he had a DVD out, and I got to meet him at a couple of the different Iberian shows, because they also have Lusitanos. And he taught me about the foal training, the technique where he also works with Dr. Miller on foal imprinting. Mm. And you start the minute the foal is coming out. I have more contact with the foal than the mare does. My mares used to be like, oh my God, thank God it's out, and she's going to, you know, you would touch with Dr. Miller. It's about the eyes, the ears, the nose. You're touching everything. You're talking to them, because it's not like we're raising wild horses where they have to go out and, you know, we're raising dance. I like to call them dancing partners. You know, we're raising horses to be in our world. And so our babies would, like the first day, the first couple of hours, they're sitting on your lap. And when you sit them on your lap and you fold their front legs and their back legs, they completely release to you. Mm. And they just fall asleep. And I just did this. Okay, so don't cry with this story. Last weekend, I was in Aiken, South Carolina, working on setting up our event we're going to be doing in Aiken in September. And Anna Maria, you might have met Anna Maria Sims at the event in Denver. She's one of our Mustangers. Called me up and she's like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to you. There had been a mare here that had had her foal, and she had to be put down because something happened with her intestines. And so there's this little baby that I didn't even know if it had gotten colostrum, where it was at or anything. And I just said, Anna Maria, get online and check out. Somebody will be posting up if they have a nurse mare. Go online and search. She went on Facebook. They found a nurse mare foal, which ended up being 7 minutes from where I'm at. That mare, just that afternoon, had lost her newborn. Anna Maria, they drove in the car. She had this baby on her lap in the car to take it to this new mare last Sunday, a week ago. She got it to the mare. I'm like, you got to be very careful because sometimes mares won't take to the babies. Just be careful. This mare immediately, the knicker. The baby started suckling right away. So I started working with him last week on teaching the mare how to sit in your lap and how to do the leading, and we'll build the little, they learn to stand on little pedestals so that you can bring them out of the stall and have a vet check them. They learn to stand in a spot. So it's very helpful training. So because it keeps the horses in a, not where you're dominating them, but where you put them in a safe place and they understand that spot there is safe. It was an incredible story.
Incredible story. That's what I was going to say. I have seen videos of mares taking on foals, you know, similar kind of situations where the mare had lost one and the foal had lost the mare and so on. And so much magic, much magic. And I feel like we live in a world, I talk about this a lot, but 1922 was the year that there were more cars than horses on most major cities around the world. That wasn't that long ago.
No. So that's a little bit more than 100 years ago.
But 100 years ago, you know, so our great grandparents, they would have heard stories about foals being born. It wouldn't have been unusual, you know, to talk about what do you do with the wild horses or not. You would have had them nearby. Now it's amazing that we can connect like this, right? But we're also so disconnected. You know, you've got allergies and pollen going on in Illinois, right? You're in Illinois.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Everything's itchy. Well, and then I was in Aiken, and that was a whole nother level of everything itchy. But the horses, it brings you to 100 years ago when there were now just suddenly more cars. Before that, every human being had some sort of connection with the sentient beings that are horses or cows, with their hearts. And every human being, even if they were walking down the street, walked past that, and whether they registered it or not, felt it. And that is something that I really believe this has a lot to do with, I don't want to say problems, but discontent and, you know, all different kinds of issues going on nowadays.
The anxiety. I was talking about this with my last guest, you know, this instant gratification. She's a third generation dude rancher. And some of what she's seeing with newer guests where she said, it's too slow, right? And again, what is that we have? You know, we're not wired for that. You can't breathe faster than you can breathe, you know? So it's really interesting. It's such a paradox. And I was also thinking, speaking of paradoxes, about the wild Mustang. This was something that I learned at the summit, which I had just never thought about. But these little guys are not born in domestication. They do not have a human there to imprint and help them trust and have positive experiences from the get-go. And that is actually huge. Can we just talk about how to build the connection of trust with a Mustang? And maybe have you had a personal experience with the Mustang?
Oh, yeah. Well, we worked last summer filming a documentary called The Mustang Speaks. that will be coming out, but it's about Anna Maria Sims and Skye Epperson's. They work together. Skye does the brain-based neuropathway release work with the Mustangs, and Anna Maria does the body. And it's the body. If the body is not feeling pain, then you can connect with the brain. A lot of these horses, because of the trauma, because of what they've gone through with the roundups, whatever, they're hurting somewhere in their body. And watching Anna Maria work, gosh, I wish I would have been able to introduce you to her. Watching Anna Maria work is pretty magical. She just knows. I mean, she just knows. So she and Skye will work together. Well, when we started filming the documentary last year with her and Skye out at Skye's ranch, they had a mare and foal. The mare's name is Ambiante. The foal is Amore. And Ambiante right now is at my friend's barn, Joe McCrae's barn, learning classical French dressage. That we've just brought her up. Patricia Cross, who has Mustang Ballet, the Mustang Ballet is a nonprofit focused on rescuing mare and foals out of the holding pens and then wow. educating them in classical dressage.
Wow.
So it's a whole new venue. There's a whole series that's on McCrae Farm's Facebook page on Ambiante's. We've been filming her last 12 weeks and we'll do it for the whole year of her training with Jill, from all the work in hand and learning long lining and being backed. And she's a 14-year-old mare. So she's one of these horses that they would pretty much so say is a three strike horse, because she's so much older. They don't think that they can learn and be domesticated. This horse has gone from being a snorting, blowing dragon to coming, you know, she just has fit right into domestic life at a barn, getting the grooming, getting, you know, bathing, everything. So, and it's really fun. We were running the films at Rocky Mountain of the first 10 weeks of her, and watching those from when she just got started to now, right before Rocky Mountain, it's amazing how far she came in what would probably be maybe, if you're 10 weeks, you're probably 30 hours of training, because she'll be worked two or three other times during the week. But it will, you know, so when you're talking about 30 hours on a horse like that, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I don't remember what trainer coined it, but it's called like the 100 mile or 100 hour.
100. Everything's 100. If you, I do that with my long lining. If I long, I fully believe that one of the best connections you can make with a horse is teaching them long reining before anything, even if it's an older horse, before you ride it, you long rein it. 100 miles. 100 miles, you have tools on your iPhone or your Fitbit watch. 100 miles, dedicate that all the time. If you can kind of keep that number in your head, that's a good training mark for everything.
I was just thinking, though, about the energy of having animals in the home, in our hearts, you know, just as a part of our way of being and seeing the world, and how beautiful that is, and that we share that, and our audience really, really resonates with that message. I would love to hear a little bit more about how we bring that into the creative field. So either a film or a book or reels on social media, you know, this incredible movement that you've created. How did you become the director of the Equus Film Festival? How did you get into film? And what challenges do you see in terms of bringing that experience, you know, to lots and lots of people who maybe don't have an understanding of what a foal is, of the difference, you know, growing up, coming right out and coming into a human's hands versus being out on the range and never connecting, just as one small example we've been talking about.
Okay. Well, just that's such a globally recognized story.
Yeah.
and letting people, you know, I think that stories are told so well through film. And I've been able to watch this incredible evolution in the last 12 years of from when I used to go, the first year we did a film festival in New York, I had a whole suitcase and Rupert would tease, you know, kind of tease me. He'd say, oh, someday you'll just be carrying that in on a little hard drive. I would have a whole suitcase full of CDs or DVDs when we would have DVDs, because that's how the film festival ran. People would send their DVDs in. Now it's on a little hard drive. Everything's on a zip file and, you know, it one thing, plug and play. But it's been interesting to watch, and with especially like we're talking a little bit about Breyer. We have a young lady that submitted a film last year. She mirrored her mother, who is a Western barrel racer, with her Breyer horse collection and her little, the doll she had and the barrel racing horse. And so her mother would do something and then she would do it. And it was so super creative. I love that. I love when people think creatively and think creatively horse-wise, because that's how we educate everyone else. Books are great. The visual is the way we learn as an animal. We learn the best visually. You know, it's just the way we learn. So if we have a really great film about how powerful horses are as healing tools, and I can take that film and go to the 11 different places we are this year. We'll be in Canada. I have filmmakers when we're in Albuquerque in November. Last year, we had a filmmaker come in from Spain. I usually have filmmakers from around the world that come in and authors that come in and just work together and exchange ideas together. And it's just being able to share that power, that storytelling. And we do books, we do podcasts, we do art, we award all of those storytelling tools, because I feel photography and artwork is as much a storytelling as a podcast or a film can be. You can see a lot in a beautiful painting or a great photo.
I had this epiphany about Breyer. I grew up playing with Breyer horses, right?
They are. And it's a gateway drug.
It's totally a gateway. But I was working with a client and I realized, you know, I was doing this work where I was helping people visualize and match with their dream horse, whether they were actually going to get the dream horse or I was just going to help them understand what breed I would recommend based on their energy. So, for example, someone who's like really flighty and like this, not going to be so good with an Arab. Let's go for a cold-blooded, you know, that kind of pairing. And then I would pull out a Breyer model horse to show them what they were looking for, map them with, you know, maybe they dream of a gray or a bay or whatever it is, right? But I realized growing up playing with these, this is such a beautiful legacy, and especially having been to Breyer, mm-hmm. and my children have now shown model horses, and there's this whole other,
my God, yeah,
creative outlet, right?
it's like really a Comic-Con.
It's a whole other thing, but to recognize, especially for people who might live in the city or in places where they don't have access to horses. You know, when I lived in Libertyville, Illinois, I would ride our horses down the Des Plaines River Trail, and people would come up to me and ask to touch them. And it felt like a public service, people who had never seen horses before, ever. And I just realized how far people are from horses, that they might get to a place one day where they say, wait, mommy, which one was real, the unicorn or the horse? Unless we imprint. And so I wonder, with your films and also with incredible events like what you did, where you brought in six real Mustangs. And I want to hear, by the way, I really want to hear what happened because I had to leave early. I wasn't able to stay and see who went home with who, but I really want to hear the story of that. But there's something that happens, and I agree with you visually, but the truth is what we're getting to, whether you're listening to this podcast conversation and podcast listeners are some of the most engaged audience that you can find out there, right? Or you're watching a film or you're reading a book. Like the truth is what we're really going for isn't what you hear, isn't what you see, isn't what you say. It's what you feel in the heart. And when you get to see these Mustangs and smell them and witness that connection with your Mustangers, you can't help but feel right.
Did you get a chance to meet the gals who are doing the Rescued Heart documentary?
Oh,
that documentary will be out. It will be in the full documentary will be in the festival in November, but they're going to be dropping another 20-minute sizzle sometime closer to September, okay. Maybe even as early as July. They'll have another 20-minute sizzle. They're covering all of the healing uses with horses, and it's pretty powerful.
Wow.
It's a very powerful, very powerful film. It's, you know, it's another one of the I love, and it's maybe it's a little sadistic, but I love when I am watching a room full of people watching a movie that I know is going to change them. Seen all of these films. I know the minute I see one of these that what is going to, you know, leave people a puddle. And when you do that and you watch people just like, and you know, they're changed forever. You can't unsee things. So you know, once you know that a horse can do this for a child, or once you know that a horse can keep a veteran from putting a gun in their mouth, you know, you can't not know that anymore. And so now you have the responsibility to go on and make sure that you share that with people. That's our job as humans, is to help each other through what we're doing.
Lisa, you are such an incredible person on this planet. I mean, the work that you're doing and the number of people that you're touching and the way that you're doing it, you are just such a connector. And I feel so blessed to have been taken under your wing and invited into the Mustang Summit herd. How did it start for you? Let's go back to maybe those younger years. You talked about Misty of Chincoteague, but were you playing with briar horses? Did you always know horses? Did you have a pony? What was it like when you were little?
I had a pony. It wasn't just my pony. It was all of our pony, but it was at my grandmother's farm. I rode pretty much so by the time I was two. I was the horse crazy girl. Always horses. It's always, there's just not a time in my life that horses have not been a main part of my life. I grew up in town, not in the country. I've worked to keep my horses boarded. We did have a breeding stable at a time of, I was running it for a friend of mine, and then her husband passed away and she had a breakdown, and you know, I dispersed the horses, but it was still the horses. It's never not been horses for me. I mean, that and dogs, but dogs and horses, but dogs are so different because it doesn't matter what kind of mood you're in. The dog is always happy to see you, but a horse will balance you. And if you're not in a good mood, you're not in a good place, that horse is going to let you know. And that's why they're such good therapy tools, unbelievably good therapy tools.
So beautiful. And the original name of this podcast, by the way, was Horses, Mountains, and Dogs. Oh my.
So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
If you were to think of what kind of horse or briar horse you think I should have, what would you think?
Well, based on your energy and what I know about you, I see a pregnant gray Mustang. It's true, though. I think that you have the depth, the love, the passion to really want to know one. And you also have the experience of having foaled, right? And knowing how to be with a mama horse and connect with her and bring her in. That's what I would see for you. And also, it's a lifelong passion. So it's not just the mare, it's the next generation and the next baby. And so you see not just this horse, but also the horse coming and the story of where that horse has been and so on. So that's what I see for you.
Well, thank you. It's the storytelling. Stories connect us all.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They really do. And the horse is ripe with stories. I knew there was a story when you told me that your horse was gelded a year and a half ago and 23, did you say?
Well, because I moved him from, he went from being where we were at, where he could be a stallion, you know, at a breeding facility. I didn't need him to be a stallion anymore. And I was moving him into a friend of mine's barn, which he could stay a stallion. She has other stallions, but they don't get to have the same life that a gelding can have. And he had his last foal is on the ground, and a very dear friend of mine bred to him, and she's got a beautiful baby, but it was time to let him be able to enjoy being out with other horses. They rub, scratch each other. They just enjoy being with each other. And not that he was never a stallion that I couldn't maybe ride in a parade or take somewhere and do something with, but people, the majority of the people in this country, especially, don't understand stallions. Especially with the Iberian horses, the Portuguese or the Andalusian horses, they're mostly all left stallion in any other country in the world other than the United States. And people think stallions and they're like, my Urano was so well-behaved. I could ride next to a mare in a parade and he would just behave. He was well-mannered. But now to be able to let him go out and hang out with his buddies, that's fun. And I don't have to worry about mares with him and, you know, if anybody in the paddocks or so, it just makes life a little easier.
Yeah, I get it. I don't have a stallion. The first stallion I ever rode was in Costa Rica for all the reasons you just stated, but I do have an intact male miniature Australian Shepherd. And so it's been interesting to witness, it's not just him, it's actually everyone around him and interacting with him because he's very well behaved, but some of the reasons for that. So speaking of paradoxes, very, very interesting to hear you talking about that a little bit. Is there anything we haven't covered? I know you have a bunch of events coming up. We'll definitely put them all in the show notes so that people can see, but are there any specifically you want people to know about or anything we haven't touched on?
No, we're going to be from British Columbia all the way down to Ocala, Florida and everywhere in between. So over the course of this next 9 months. So
are you trailering? Because here's a story. I want to hear about the 6 baby Mustangs and what happened to them. But are you trailering new Mustangs every time? Or are you working with the same group?
There's two things I'm going to remember to tell you. So we work a lot with the BLM, and now I'm going to be working with the Forest Service as well. So some of our events are just films, and then some of them are films and Mustang summits. So where we're doing the Mustang summits, we will also then be partnering, whether it's the BLM or the Forest Service. They provide me with 6 yearlings. And so like Denver, about 2 months out, they got my yearlings together. We had fillies. We had all girls. And they kept them in a little unit. They got to be in a family unit so that they weren't so stressed being loaded up and shipped down to us. And all that, and they were all kind of used to each other. And it, one of the beautiful things when we were in Denver was that I went down on Saturday afternoon, and I always worry about, you know, how the horses are adjusting and that. And this event was particularly a little more stressful for me because they had a lot of public that thought that what we were doing with the yearlings was going to be awful, and it wasn't, you know, it was going to be too stressful for the horses. And I wanted to make sure everything went well. So I would go to and check on the babies all the time. And I get over there Saturday afternoon, and four of them are flat out sound asleep in their, each one of them in their pen. Two were up, and there's always one up watching, yeah, but two of them were up watching. And all, I mean, they were flat out. And I was thinking, I took a little video of it, and I was like, well, I guess the stress isn't too much for them, you know? And so that made me feel really good that they got that relaxed and that comfortable,
yeah,
away. But there's a lot of care I take to make sure that how they're treated and what we get for these events, because it's really important to make sure that one, they all get adopted. That's mm-hmm. key. All six of them were adopted. The one lady who was the doctor, she was a veterinarian, and her daughter was with them. They were doing some stuff on the stage you were at. She adopted two of them. Oh, so great. They'll be together. One came back, Mustang Ballet, adopted the little paint horse. They're all in amazing homes. They all got adopted. So we'll follow a few of their stories in the Mustang Story YouTube channel. Awesome. So, that's what's kind of fun about it. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is we're going to be doing the event in Aztec, New Mexico at the end of July. And this just came, I mean, we just decided to do this last week. And I talked to the Forest Service people today. This will be a film festival only event, but it's around the Mustang documentary that we've had in the festival last year called Rambo, the Mustangs of Jicarilla. And the Jicarilla Mustangs are up in that northwest corner by the Four Corners area in New Mexico. And so that's where we're going to do this festival. But since Laura Harper did her documentary, she's now found out with all of the DNA coming back in on these horses that the only place in the world that you can find this line of Spanish horse is in the Jicarilla area right there. There's nowhere else. The horse no longer exists in Spain. It's wow. So now we're talking to the Department of Tourism. We had a meeting last week, and they're going to be starting what I like to think of as the Chincoteague model. We're building an event around, building an education program around these wild horses, and starting an ecotourism program around these horses to save this last band, because this is it. This is the only place that this band of horses are. So now they're what's called a heritage horse.
Wow.
So it's going to change the whole thing. So because of a filmmaker making a film and doing her research, so this is one way. And if we did this kind of this Chincoteague model with all the different HMAs around the country, where there are the different Mustangs with very different, distinct body styles and temperaments. And, you know, people like horses from a certain HMAs because some of them are better for endurance riding, or some of them are better for jumping. If we can do that with the HMAs and make them where people come to do those kind of events, that solves a lot of the problem. So,
yeah.
So now we'll get to see it in practice when we are doing it in Aztec, New Mexico.
So cool. I grew up in Santa Fe, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
I love New Mexico.
Land of Enchantment. Yep.
Yes,
Green chili and water conservation. I'm definitely a Mexican at heart. I was thinking as you were talking about judgment of, you know, people being concerned that the young fillies would be stressed out and so on. The quote by Brené Brown, which I'm sure you're familiar with, I think it was Roosevelt, but the credit goes to the man in the arena, right? And the other thing I was thinking is it's kind of interesting, and maybe this is where some of this is coming from, but we have such a country that's so focused on spectator sports, right? And just throwing stuff out there, folks who don't have any idea what they're talking about, you know, and how important it is to really get into the mindset of a horse person and the Mustangers specifically, who are there mirroring and reflecting in the arena what it is that this baby horse needs in each moment, and how beautiful that is, you know, that you all put them into a group together so that they were already bonded prior to being moved for the first time. And then they knew each other. They had their herd in this new space. Like, you just have such heart about how you're doing all of this. And I just want to make sure people see that, you know, in big, bold lights, because that's what it takes to change the world.
Well, and I want to make sure that people know that the BLM is working really hard with me and with what we're doing. And they're putting, you know, they could say to me, well, tough shit, we're going to send you six Mustangs and that's too bad. Everybody is bending over backwards to make sure that these horses, I haven't met a person who works for the Bureau of Land Management that has not loved the horses. And maybe I'm just naive, and maybe I've only met, you know, in the last couple of years, so many people, but everyone that I've met has had the horses at heart.
Yeah.
And so much so we'll be doing another big event up in Colorado. I'm working with the BLM to start a whole new event on the Western Slope in May of 2025. Because they're so excited and they're happy to see this happening. So they get a bad rap, and there's times where I've seen in documentaries where, yeah, maybe they should get a bad rap, but I haven't personally met any of those people. The people I've met have been genuine and really wanting to help and loving the horses and having Mustangs themselves and having burros themselves. So they have really helped and reached out. And every Forest Service person I've worked with has just been uber helpful. So when all of these people, and again, it's more, that's why we more focus on our efforts on off range, because the on range people get mean. You know, they say we just need to keep the horses out there and everything else. Well, that's fine. That's a battle that you all can fight. We still have all of these horses standing and holding, and all of these horses need to be in homes or in good long-term holding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get into the battle, but we get into the thick of it with the off-range stuff.
Yeah.
So
I think when I was first coming down to the summit and we were talking about possibly doing a podcast interview or doing a talk and so on, I recognized, just like talking about wolves, especially here in the Idaho area, how maybe that's the next one, Mustangs, mountains, and wolves, you know?
Yeah.
But just how political it can be.
Yes.
Very, very quickly, you know, and the same is true here with the land, you know, and that was true for me growing up in New Mexico too, and even in Illinois, but changing the land, carving out the land, whose sacred land was it first, you know, all those things. It's, yeah, we've got a lot to look at in this world right now and be present to, and really,
yes,
you know, learn how to be true to ourselves. And again, I just go back to that saying, the credit goes to the one in the arena, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the work you're doing. Is there anything else that you'd like to say as a one last takeaway? We've been chatting for a beautiful hour here together.
No, but we're going to be making sure that you're coming to more locations to do more, more interacting and learning. You can learn more. Yeah. And you'll be able to connect up. Like I've had podcasters say to me, oh my gosh, I've got my schedule set for you because of all of the different people that are, we had over 55 people just engaged in the Mustang Summit and the film festival part of it in Denver. And this was just a small event. It wasn't our wow. big end of year event. And those were just people that were part of our, like what you are, part of the herd.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's my pleasure to, you know, carry these messages and this work on in this way. And I'm so grateful we got to connect because you are just incredible. Thank you so much for all you're doing,
Lisa.
Thank you
for having me.
All right. Appreciate you. We'll be in touch. Take care.
Okay, bye. Night. Bye-bye. Bye.